Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are taking a sledgehammer to the way we think about infrastructure.
A big one.
We're looking at a stack of documents, white papers, technical specs, feasibility reports that argue our entire modern world is built on something they call linear fragility.
Yeah.
And honestly, after reading through this, fragile feels like a massive understatement.
It's a polite way of saying we're all sitting on a house of cards. The core argument here, and this comes from an organization called Deriticular and their Rural Infrastructure Operating System, or RIOS for short,
right,
is that we've optimized everything for efficiency, but we've completely sacrificed resilience.
It's the just-in-time supply chain problem, but, you know, applied to
power
grid, to the internet.
Exactly.
You cut one line, the lights go out, you hack one central server, the data stops flowing. It's brittle.
Exactly. And the alternative these documents propose is this concept of spherical resilience. So instead of a long, thin line that breaks easily, you build what they call civilizations in a box. Systems that can go into island mode.
Island mode. I love that term.
So it's great, isn't it?
It implies that if the rest of the world goes dark, your local node, your solar panel, your drone, your server, it just keeps humming along.
It doesn't need to call home to a master server to know it exists.
And that is the massive shift. We're moving from a model where we, you know, we trust a central authority.
A cloud provider, a utility company.
To a model where we trust physics and math.
Mm.
And I guess that's the mission for this deep dive. We need to unpack how a drone or a solar inverter can prove its identity without a password.
Using the laws of physics instead.
It really does sound like science fiction. But the sources are very grounded in engineering. We've got these studies on Linux distros, specs for sovereign stacks, deep dives into radio frequency analysis.
Yep.
So let's start at the bottom, the foundation, the operating system.
This is where the rubber meets the road. I mean, if you want to build a civilization in a box, you need a computer to run it.
Of course.
And the feasibility report we have paints a pretty bleak picture of the current state of privacy-focused computing in 2026.
Yeah, this actually surprised me. I consider myself pretty tech literate, and I just assumed if you wanted a secure private setup, you'd grab a USB stick, load up Tails or Kodachi.
And you're good to go.
And you're good to go.
Right.
But the report basically says, don't do that.
It's counterintuitive, right? I mean, Tails is the gold standard for whistleblowers, for journalists.
Right.
But here's the catch. Tails is amnesic. It is designed to forget everything the moment you shut it down.
Which is a feature?
It's a feature if you're at an internet cafe avoiding the secret police. But if you are a node in a decentralized infrastructure network, amnesia is a fatal flaw.
Because the network relies on you remembering things.
Precisely. The protocols we're looking at today, specifically the storage layer, Hyphenate, it requires a persistent data store. Your node has to hold on to encrypted chunks of data for other people.
So if you wipe your brain every time the power flickers,
you aren't helping the network, you're just leeching off it. You can't build a history or, you know, a reputation.
So the burn after reading spy approach doesn't work for building a power grid.
Mm-hmm.
You need stability.
You need stability. The report actually recommends a manual install on a stable base like Kubuntu, but that's just for the desktop side. The real innovation in these documents is industrial, the RIOS sovereign stack.
And that starts with solving what they call the Oracle problem.
Yes.
That sounds ancient, but in this context, it's the oldest, nastiest problem in blockchain, isn't it?
It is, and it's the reason why supply chains on the blockchain has mostly been a marketing gimmick until now.
Okay, so what is it?
Here's the problem. Imagine you have a blockchain. It's secure, it's immutable, unhackable. You use it to record that a solar panel generated, say, 50 kilowatt hours of energy.
Okay, so the ledger says 50.
But how does the ledger know that's true?
Right.
It doesn't. It only knows that someone told it 50. If I hack the sensor, or if I just open a terminal and type 50 when I actually generated zero,
the blockchain will perfectly record the lie.
Perfectly, securely, forever.
Garbage in, permanent garbage out. The digital record is perfect, but the link to the physical world is broken.
Precisely. That gap between the messy physical world and the perfect digital ledger, that is the Oracle problem. Hmm. And RIOS claims to solve this by anchoring digital identity to atoms.
Which is a fantastic tagline.
It is.
But how do you actually do that? How do you make a computer trust a solar panel?
You need a hardware root of trust. And according to the Deriticular specs, they use a two-pillar system.
Okay.
The first pillar is something you might have on your laptop right now, a TPM 2.0 chip.
The trusted platform module.
Correct. It's a dedicated chip with a private cryptographic key burned into the silicon at the factory. It's non-exportable. You can't copy-paste it. You can't put it on a thumb drive.
So whenever that solar panel sends data, it signs the packet with that unique private key.
Right. The data isn't just 50 kilowatt-hour. It's 50 kilowatt-hour signed by this specific chip inside inverter #849.
Okay, but chips can be physically stolen.
They can.
If I steal your solar inverter, I have the key. I can still feed it fake data if I'm clever enough.
You can, and that's why the second pillar is the real game changer. Radio frequency fingerprinting, or RFF.
This was the aha moment for me reading the papers. It feels like something out of a spy novel.
It relies on the chaotic nature of manufacturing. When you make a circuit board, it is never perfect. The soldering is a micron off here. A capacitor is a tiny bit thicker there.
So these microscopic imperfections are unique to every single device.
Like a fingerprint.
Or a voice print.
Exactly like a voice print. When the device powers up or when it transmits a signal, it has a unique, a physical accent. Mm. Ryos uses software-defined radio SDR to listen to that signal. It analyzes the transient response, which is the exact curve of the voltage as it ramps up.
And you can't fake that with software.
It is incredibly difficult. You can clone code. You can steal a password. But to clone the exact physics of how a capacitor warms up on a specific circuit board, you would have to manufacture a clone atom by atom.
So the system isn't asking, do you have the password? It's asking, are you physically the machine?
You claim to be. It's proof of existence. We're trusting the atoms, not the user.
Okay, so we've anchored the truth to the hardware. We know the machine is real. Now we need to talk about where that data goes. Because the network architecture described here is, well, it's complex. It's not just the internet. It's a dual stack.
It has to be two stacks because we have two different needs. The documents describe it as a library and a clerk.
I really like that analogy. Yeah. Let's break down the library first. This is Hyphenet.
Yes, Hyphenet, which used to be known as Legacy Freenet. Think of it as your deep, cold storage.
Okay.
It is designed to be censorship resistant and immutable. It's slow, it has high latency, but it effectively never forgets.
So this is where you store the heavy static stuff.
Exactly. Repair manuals, firmware binaries, regulatory audit logs, things you write once and maybe read 5 years from now. It uses something called content hash keys.
Which means the address of the file is basically determined by the math of the file itself.
Right. If you change a single comma in a repair manual, the cryptographic hash changes, which means the address changes, the old link breaks.
So if you have a link to a file on Hyphenet, you know with mathematical certainty that that file has not been tampered with.
If it had, the link just wouldn't work.
Okay, so that's the library. Secure, perfect memory, but slow as molasses.
Yeah.
You can't run a real-time power grid on a library.
No, you need speed.
You need speed. That's the clerk.
That is Lucutus, or the new Freenet. This is the dynamic layer. It handles real-time state management. Is the light on? Is the drone active? What is the current voltage?
And the sources say this uses WebAssembly smart contracts. But why not just use something like Ethereum or Solana? Why build a whole new thing?
Well, it really comes down to economics. The sources call it a zero-gas architecture.
Okay, explain gas for the listener who hasn't, lost money trading crypto.
In systems like Ethereum, you pay a fee, they call it gas, every single time you write to Ledger. And that works fine if you're moving $1 million. But imagine you are a rural farmer. Your solar array needs to log data every second to stay compliant with the grid.
You'd be paying a fee every second. You'd be bankrupt before lunch.
Exactly. Industrial IoT requires high-frequency data. You cannot pay a toll every time a sensor blinks. Lucutus is designed to handle that load without those transaction fees. It makes this whole sovereign stack economically viable for real-world stuff, not just financial speculation.
So we have the hardware proving the truth, the library storing the history, and the clerk handling the live action.
Yep.
I want to see this in motion. The sources use this great narrative of the curb car, an autonomous delivery drone. And this is where the physics and truth gets really wild.
This is my favorite part of the stack. It's where geometry becomes a security feature.
So set the scene. We have a drone. It wakes up in a charging node in, say, Arizona. It needs to deliver a package.
Right.
In the old world, it would ping a central server, say, I'm here, and the server would say, okay.
But in this decentralized world, there is no central server. There's no Uber HQ. So how does the network know the drone is really in Arizona and not, being spoofed by a hacker in a basement in Texas?
This is the classic civil attack, right? The physical double spend.
Exactly.
I have the real drone in Arizona and a digital clone in Texas, both trying to log in as the same identity, to double bill the network.
So Rios handles this by checking a distributed state contract through the clerk. It sees that the drone's identity was active in Arizona 2 seconds ago.
And now the clone in Texas tries to ping the network.
The system runs a check. It calculates the Haverscene distance. That's just a fancy term for the distance between two points on a sphere as the crow flies.
So distance between Arizona and Texas.
Then it looks at the time difference, 2 seconds. Mm. And it does the math on velocity.
VEM is maximum believable velocity.
And the system realizes that to get from Arizona to Texas in 2 seconds, you would have to travel at Mach 50, or essentially teleport.
And since teleportation is a physics violation,
one of you is lying. The identity gets locked. It effectively uses the speed of travel and the speed of light as a hard constraint. You can hack software, but you cannot hack the speed of light.
That is such a cool concept. Physics as a firewall. But the sources mention another layer here called provenance or exit visas.
Yes.
Because knowing where you are now isn't enough. We need to know how you got there.
This is the chain of custody. When the drone leaves that charging node in Arizona, the node cryptographically signs a packet, an exit visa. It says, I, node A, saw this drone at 9 a.m.
Like getting your passport stamped when you leave a country.
Exactly like that. When the drone arrives at the next town, it presents that visa. The new node checks the signature. It proves the drone physically traversed the path. It didn't just appear out of thin air. It has a continuous, unbroken history of movement.
But wait, hold on. If I'm driving my car, or if this curb car is my personal vehicle, I don't want a permanent public record of every turn I took. That sounds like a surveillance nightmare.
Yeah.
If the blockchain is public, can everyone see where I've been?
And that is the ultimate tension, isn't it? Security versus privacy. The sources do mention they solve this with zero-knowledge proofs or ZKPs.
Give us the quick and dirty on ZKPs in this context. How do I prove I was there without telling you I was there?
The zero-knowledge proof lets you prove you know a secret without revealing the secret itself. So in this case, the drone can prove to the network, I have a valid exit visa from a neighboring node, and the network can verify that that statement is mathematically true.
Right.
Without the drone revealing exactly which node it came from.
So you prove the path is valid, but you don't show the map.
You got it. You get the security of the physics check without the surveillance of the tracking log. It's a way to have accountability without a panopticon.
Okay, so we've covered the machines, but eventually a human has to touch this stuff.
Always.
A human has to fix the solar panel, update the drone firmware, shut down a reactor. And humans, well, we are messy. We lose passwords, we get bribed, we get lazy.
We are always the weak link in any security system. You can anchor the machine to physics, but how do you anchor the human?
The sources discuss the human element and introduce something called sovereign badges. Now, I have to be honest, when I see badge and blockchain in the same sense, I immediately think of, like, expensive pictures of monkeys.
No, thankfully, this is not that. These are what the industry calls soulbound NFTs.
Soulbound is a great fantasy term, but what does it mean practically?
It means the token is non-transferable. You cannot sell it on OpenSea. You cannot give it to a friend. It is bound to your specific wallet address forever. It represents a credential, like a diploma or a certification.
So the Dearticular Academy issues a certified administrator badge to my wallet. And it's basically a digital diploma that actually functions as a key.
Right. And here is how it secures the infrastructure. Let's say a technician needs to lower the power output of a generator. The system requires a handshake.
A handshake between whom?
Between the man and the machine. It creates a dual signed object. The log entry for that action needs 2 signatures.
2 signatures.
One from the machine's TPM proving where the command happened physically, and one from the human sovereign badge proving who authorized it and that they were qualified to do so.
So if I look at the audit log later, I don't just see power down.
Mm-hmm.
I see power down, performed by machine X, authorized by certified admin Y.
It creates a trustless chain of custody, and it solves the stolen tablet problem beautifully.
How so? If I steal the admin's iPad, I have his badge, right? I have his private key.
Yeah, his private key, yes. But the system relies on dynamic revocation lists on that hyphenate layer. The moment that tablet is reported stolen, the Academy burns the validity of that soul-bound token.
Burns it.
They broadcast a message saying, badge I tagged 123 is no longer valid. The next time you try to use the stolen tablet to sign a command, the machine checks the list, sees the badge is revoked, and just says, access denied.
So even though you have
the key no longer turns the lock.
It's like a digital kill switch for credentials.
And for really high stakes stuff like shutting down a nuclear reactor or a main grid line, the sources say they can require multi-sig.
Two keys turn the lock.
Exactly. The smart contract can demand that two different people with two different badges agree on the command within, say, a 5-minute window. It brings that nuclear launch logic to decentralized infrastructure.
It's fascinating. They're rebuilding all these social structures.
Yeah.
Passports, diplomas, two-man rules. But they're doing it entirely with math and cryptography.
That's the definition of the sovereign stack. It's taking the rules of society and baking them into the code and the hardware so they can't be bypassed by a corrupt manager or a lazy employee.
So let's zoom out. We've unpacked the Linux base, the RIOS operating system, the dual stack freenet, the physics of truth, and the sovereign badges. Why does this matter? Why should the listener care about how a solar panel proves its identity?
I think the big shift here is that digital truth is becoming a scarce resource. We are just flooded with deepfakes, AI-generated content, spoofed data. The internet is becoming a hall of mirrors.
It's so hard to know what's real anymore. I saw a video yesterday that I swore was real, and it was 100% AI.
Exactly. And this technology offers a way to anchor truth back to reality. And it has immediate applications. Look at the EU deforestation regulation, the EUDR.
We saw that in the notes. That's a massive piece of legislation coming into effect.
It is. The EU is effectively saying, if you want to sell coffee, cocoa, or rubber in Europe, you must prove down to the meter that it didn't come from deforested land.
And a paper receipt from some middleman isn't going to cut it anymore. Paper is too easy to forge.
No. But imagine a cryptographically signed log from a RIOS node. It's anchored to a specific GPS coordinate. It's signed by a TPM chip. It's verified by its radio frequency fingerprint. That is mathematical proof of origin.
So a buyer in a coffee shop in London can scan a QR code and know without a doubt that their beans came from a specific plot of land in Uganda that is legally compliant.
It cuts out the corruption. It cuts out the greenwashing. It connects the consumer directly to the physical reality of the producer. It empowers the farmer because their data is their proof.
It's almost ironic, isn't it? We are using the most advanced sci-fi tech-available blockchains, SDRs, ZKPs, to get back to something very primitive. This is a real thing from a real place.
Spherical resilience isn't just about surviving a blackout. It's about surviving a world where you can't trust what you see on a screen. It's about rebuilding trust from the atom up.
Before we go, I want to touch on one final concept from the sources that really stuck with me. We talked about identity staking.
This is the provocative thought for the day. Usually in crypto, you stake money. You put up, say, 32 Ethereum to prove you're honest. If you lie, you get slashed, you lose your money.
And the criticism there is that it creates a plutocracy. The
yeah.
rich get to be more real than the poor because they can afford the stake.
Exactly. But RIOS hints at a different kind of staking. You aren't staking money. You are staking reality.
Break that down. What does it mean to stake reality?
To participate in this network, you don't need $1 million. You need a physical presence. You stake your hardware. You stake your exit visa from the last town you visited. You stake the fact that you exist in space and time.
It levels the playing field.
It does. In a future where AI can fake your voice, your face, and your writing.
The only thing you have left that cannot be faked is your physical location and the specific atoms of the device you are holding.
Hardware is the only truth.
That is both comforting and a little terrifying. It puts a lot of weight on the physical world.
It's the grounding we might need. We've spent 20 years moving everything to the cloud. Maybe it's time to bring some of it back down to Earth.
Well, if you want to replace linear fragility with spherical resilience, it looks like you're going to need a lot of bandwidth, a soldering iron, and very good understanding of physics.
And maybe a good Linux manual.
Always a good Linux manual. Thanks for listening, everyone. Dive deep and stay sovereign.